goes deeper into today's headlines than anyone else dares to go. But you can take it. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio, AM 640 and HD Radio.
I'm the guy that calls space. It's View from Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. I want to welcome you in with the aborted start here at tonight's show. If you're driving around right now listening to AM 640, I welcome you in. If you're at work right now listening to AM 640 by the AM 640 app, I welcome you in also. Or if you're listening to me now in your Shaw Direct Channel 865, we'll welcome you in. Or if you're listening to me right now on your 3 or 4G personal communication device via the Stream the World software, I welcome you in. Now available, too, by the way, on Apple Music. Or maybe you're what some call the best seat in the house, sitting in front of your Mac or your PC, logged on to 640toronto.com, picking up the live audio streaming there. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you in. I'll tell you right now, the media that I call the Illuminati-controlled mass media, their job is to control what people think. The new religion to come, which is to be the one that the elite in this world, our world, as they see themselves, our gods, bow down to, they worship it. It's being practiced now. It's even being practiced now in front of you, and it's been going on all this week, showcased in the Illuminati-controlled mass media. And that religion is black magic, witchcraft, paganism, in a word, sun worship. In other words, man is God. It's all of the ancient black arts that have been used by all the greatest leaders of the world throughout history, the most powerful personages you learnt about in school. I really mean indoctrinated. These ancient black arts, enabling control of the masses, has been practiced by all the famous kings, queens, political leaders of this world to create the deception and illusion that man is God. And believe me, with today's technology, this deception, this illusion has been made very easy to reach billions with that message. Just exactly what do I mean by this religion being showcased in front of you all of this week? Do you recall the event shown to you this week? One of the illusions portrayed was via NASA teasing you with some very historic, earth-shaking, groundbreaking news. They announced the discovery. Actually, they said they were going to announce something later. Keep tuned. The old tease. Then they announced the discovery of 7 new planets that could hold life. For the first time ever, the report goes on to say, have discovered 7 Earth-sized planets orbiting a nearby star. And these new worlds could hold life. Notice the number invoked here? 7 planets. 7. The number 7 is the number of spirituality in the occult. This cluster of 7 planets is supposedly less than, wait for it, here it comes, the second number to be connected with this spell being cast. That this discovery lies 40 light years away in the constellation Aquarius, according to NASA. And the Belgian-led research team who announced the discovery earlier this week, did you hear that? The number 4? 40 light years away, drop the 0. Because it means nothing. 4 is the number of foundation. When you build a foundation, what's it made up of? Well, as simple as this, 4 sides. The ones who call themselves the builders of our world, the elite, are looking for the building blocks of life. And their plan invokes and involves extraterrestrials. These 7 planets supposedly circle tightly around a dim dwarf star called TRAPPIST-1, barely the size of Jupiter, we're told. 3 are in the so-called habitable zone, where liquid water and possibly life might exist. The others are right on the doorstep. So the scientists, I mean, high priests of this black art deception, say they'll need to study the atmosphere a little more before determining whether these rocky terrestrial planets could support some sort of life. But it already shows just how many Earth-sized planets could be out there, especially in a star's sweet spot, as they call it, ripe for extraterrestrial life. So here's what the message was from NASA this week, in the form of a black magic spell that was being cast, that we've, meaning all of mankind, now have made a crucial step towards finding if there is life out there. Here's what one of the researchers from the University of Cambridge, Amory Triod, said. He said the potential for more Earth-sized planets in our Milky Way galaxy is mind-boggling. In other words, how could it possibly be that there aren't extraterrestrials? Another high priest of the Black Arts, Emmanuel Yehin, of the University of Liège, went on to program the masses this week with this statement on his this momentous discovery. He said there are 200 billion stars in our galaxy, so do an account. You multiply this by 10, and you have the number of Earth-sized planets in the galaxy, which is a lot. How about his math, huh? How about his logic? Yes, from both of these British universities, Cambridge and Liège, is where you find this brainwashing fake news, where it comes from. Same place. Because if you do your research into this news item that was released this week, you'll find out where it really came from, because it was last spring, you see. It was one of those very university that I've just mentioned. It was the University of Liège that the professor there, Michael Gillen, and his team supposedly reportedly finding three planets around the dim dwarf star called TRAPPIST-1. But now, this week, they've boosted the count up to the spiritual number of 7. And Gillen says that there could even be more planets. Their latest findings appear in the journal Nature magazine. Now in the Black Art of Numerology, this gematria for the word Trappist, rather, adds up to 39. Now add the number 1 of the TRAPPIST-1, this dim dwarf star they call TRAPPIST-1. You add the number 1 because the discovery was made at this dwarf star, and lo and behold, presto, abracadabra, ta-da! You get sheer magic. You get the number 40. Now drop the 0 again because it means nothing, and you're left with, yes, the number of foundation. TRAPPIST-1, where life could actually exist. Now, to begin this ritual of this high witchcraft-based ritual spell, NASA announced that it would be holding a press conference on Wednesday earlier this week to present new findings on the planets that orbit stars other than our sun. NASA tweeted this at 12:20 in the afternoon this past Wednesday. Psst! We've got exciting news from beyond our solar system. Spoiler, not aliens. Watch NASA.gov/live at 1 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. So you can imagine how Twitter reacted. The way Twitter always reacts whenever NASA announces a press conference. Remember, Twitter is a large part of the black arts, using today's technology to cast spells. Millions have speculated excitedly that the space agency was about to confirm the existence of aliens this week, while the other accepted view, you know, they're portrayed as the more serious-minded tweeters, they felt that it definitely wouldn't be aliens. I checked out a lot of the tweets for you to prove my point. One read, "I can't sleep. I'm so excited. What if NASA found aliens?" Others tweeted things like, "If NASA doesn't announce that we found aliens, I'm going to be a little disappointed." Another one read, "Sigh. No, NASA didn't find aliens. It's never aliens." There were other less impactful brainwashing propaganda stories that came out in this past week in the Illuminati-controlled mass media, connected with the same concept of finding the answer to life itself in the stars above. There was this. Late next year, NASA, hoping to launch its space launch system, a powerful next-generation rocket now capable, they say, of exerting 2 million pounds of thrust. NASA engineers have now completed construction of this stand that's sturdy enough, this launch pad that's sturdy enough to test its enormous fuel tank. It's an important milestone and another step towards sending humans to Mars, we're told. Now, this week, NASA also announced that their disruptive, egomaniacal president asked them to consider looking into the idea of testing this new unmanned rocket that's scheduled to begin next year. With men on board! Hurry it up, Trump says. Forget about testing unmanned. We want it with men aboard. And the other story that was in the Illuminati-controlled mass media this week, again connected to this same idea, was another rocket launch. Did you hear about that one? It may have been eclipsed by NASA's big nothing announcement. The company known as SpaceX. Get it? Space. Sex. It's owned by Elon Musk. He's one of the high priests of sun worship. Same guy that owns the electric car company, Tesla, of course. He's got a contract with NASA to deliver some supplies occasionally to the International Space Station with his reusable rocket dubbed the Dragon. The SpaceX Dragon capsule, carrying nearly 5,500 pounds of supplies and science experiments, arrived safely at the International Space Station, its destination, early Thursday. One whole day later than it was scheduled to. What happened was that after an aborted rendezvous the day before, sort of like the show a few minutes ago, this past Wednesday, the day the Dragon was due to dock, they didn't show up. Why were they so late? Well, NASA said flight computers triggered the abort because the navigation calculating Dragon's position relative to the space station was faulty. Did you get it? It was a simple case of someone, say like you, a driver in a car, following Google's GPS when it's wrong and it took you to the wrong place. Yeah, you heard me correctly. The latest rocket invention couldn't find its way a mere 250 miles above the Earth, where the ISS is, to deliver a simple payload of some supplies into space. Yet NASA wants you to believe that they're perfectly capable of being able to travel to Mars. About a 300-day journey, 5 million kilometers, with really, there's no fuel tank big enough to ever get there. But that doesn't matter. All they have to do is talk it and people will believe it. Oh, by the way, after finally finding its way to the ISS on Thursday, a Russian Progress resupply ship that's been doing all of the heavy duty lifting, flying for the first time since it failed launch a few weeks ago, December 1st, 2016. It docked at the ISS on Friday. So, fumbling, bumbling rocket shots to the ISS. That's only about 250 to 300 miles straight above us. Another black magic art practiced blatantly right in front of you this week, not deceptively hidden at all, was this. The headline read, "A spell to bind Donald Trump and all those who abet him, February 24th, mass ritual." That would be last night, Friday night, for the ritual to be performed. February, the second month of the year, the date, 24th, added together, you get the sun worshipers number 8. But here comes the magic again. When you add the year 2017 in the numerology, as well as the sum of the month and the date, you end up with a 666, a hidden 666, magically formed. This document contains all of the supposed knowledge of spell casting to be rid of someone you don't like. It went viral, as they say, this week. But you know how things go viral, don't you? The Illuminati-controlled mass media gets a hold of it first, says it goes viral, and then everyone goes to check it out. That's how viral spins. This is how to cast spells. An actual document that lists how to cast spells against people, making the rounds on the internet all this week, and supposedly quite a few magical groups, both secretive and public, have picked it up. The instructions give you step-by-step instruction with all of paraphernalia that's required to use, all the prayers that are required to say of how to actually perform the ritual. But I tell you now, this information is not, I repeat, not real. These people that have put out this viral document is sort of like a cartoon compared to the real thing of voodoo, black magic arts. More when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. More next. I'm the guy to call Space. You can email me, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thanks so much for the one that written. M from Toronto writes, 7 new planets? That's exactly what the elites want us to believe. I've lived a long life and never met an astronaut. The Illuminati-controlled mass media wants me to believe whatever they say. Absolutely. I opened the show with the line. The media's job is to control what people think. And as we creep up to the spring equinox, things are starting to heat up, aren't they? With 7 new planets discovered, about 40 light years away. Also, they're getting ready to go to Mars this week, it was announced. And we've also had 2 rocket launches that have been fumbling and bumbling to try to get to their target, the International Space Station, which orbits above the Earth about 250 to 300 miles in about that area. They can't hit that. Yet they're going to hit a planet 5 million miles away that's going to take over 300 days, almost a year, to travel. Black magic is what it is. And the black magic spell practiced blatantly right in front of us this week was the spell to rid the world of Donald Trump. Can you imagine? The viral document describes all of, as I said, the paraphernalia needed, all of the prayers that are required. But they actually don't really get down to what voodoo ritual character and person's assassination is all about, because witchcraft is real. And you can actually attack people with spells. The instructions were given step by step, sort of cartoonish, really. It's an instruction of how to actually perform the ritual. But as I say, this information is not real. It's not the real black arts on the how-to. The origin of this whole cast a ritual spell on Donald Trump, by the way, was allegedly created by a member of a private magical order who wished to remain anonymous. Well, I can tell you right now just who anonymous really is. It's the programmers. It's the brainwashing octopus organization behind the Illuminati-controlled mass media, using new technology that's managed to wrap its tentacles around the zeitgeist of today. The true meaning of the word zeitgeist, of course, is the defining spirit or mood of a particular period of history as shown by the ideas and beliefs of this time. I suggest to you now that the Illuminati's view that man is God is becoming an ever-increasing, ever-growing cult in today's world of zeitgeist. However increasing, you ask? There were all sorts of postings on the internet calling on people to join us. Perform your own ritual spell at home to get rid of Donald Trump. There was even a talk show host that was heard to call for people to join in just for fun if they liked to help get rid of Donald Trump using the black magic spell described. On the evening described last night. Witchcraft, as I said, is real. It's being practiced on you today by the Illuminati. The hexagram is one of the most powerful symbols to witches, magicians, sorcerers. It's used in different kinds of witchcraft, magic and occultism, even used in the casting of zodiacal horoscopes because of the fact of it having 6 points. It creates the magic. Because you see, it contains the hidden 666, which is why the hexagram is considered to be Satan's most powerful symbol. This is why one of the most volatile spots in the whole world today is marked by a hexagram. What am I talking about? The State of Israel. The center of attraction in the Middle East. The hexagram is the flag of Israel. 2 triangles united. In the occult world of witchcraft, the hexagram is formed when the water triangle and the fire triangle are unified, pushed together to interlock. When this is done, the hexagram is formed. The triangle is one of the most utilized occultic symbols in the world of witchcraft. A triangle with its point downward represents the deity and is called the deity's triangle, or the water triangle. With one point up, it's called the earthly triangle, pointing up toward the sky. The pyramid triangle, also known, or it's also known as the fire triangle. These two definitions of the triangle are standard occult belief. Now, the great goal of the Illuminati is to make their new religion the only religion and to be worshipped overtly. They don't want to do it in secret. They want you to be involved and know that you're worshipping Lucifer. And they want to rebuild Solomon's temple and install the highest bloodline relative of the tribe of Cain. And that is going to be the Antichrist. when Solomon's temple is rebuilt for the third time, he's going to walk in and call himself God. It's the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640. This is ABFS. There's more right after this break. I'm the guy we call the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. You can email me at space@640toronto.com or spaceman@640toronto.com. Thanks for the one that you've sent. I really appreciate it, especially if you're the first-time emailer. I really appreciate that. I really do, because there's a lot of people that are emailing for the first time. Now, as I said, the great goal of the Illuminati is to build Solomon's Temple once again for the third and final time. Yes, the royal number. But in order to create a vacuum for the world needing a new religion, the three monotheistic religions have to be outlawed as illegal and made banned. That would be Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, as being the trouble, the cause for all the trouble that the world has ever experienced. And once that Third World War, which will be the ideological war pitting Christianity, Judaism against Islam, there will be a void. And that's when Luciferianism will take over and take control. And man, who will call himself God, will be installed in Solomon's temple. The symbol plays a huge role in this plot, the six-pointed star, the hexagram, today's flag of Israel, originally Solomon's seal. The star is associated with sexual depravity, whoring after false gods. It's the hexagram from occult magic and necromancy of Egypt. But how did this figure of a hexagram become popular in Israel? In one word, the answer, of course, is the one they call the wisest man in the world, King Solomon. You know why they call him the wisest man in the world? Because he had all of the information on the black arts, which demons to call up, which incantations garnered what spells, and what power came from these demonic entities when controlled by King Solomon. So after Solomon became king of Israel, he violated all the specific commands of God to kings on an unprecedented scale. Those special commandments of God to the kings, which Solomon violated like no other, found in Deuteronomy 17, verses 15 through 19 today in your King James Version of your Bible. There's no wonder that the goal of Freemasonry is to rebuild Solomon's temple. 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 1. And Solomon made a bond with the Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and took Pharaoh's daughter as his wife, and brought her into the city of David, until he had made an end of building his own house, and the house of the Lord, and the wall of Jerusalem round about. The influence of the daughter of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, was no doubt considerable, of course, as she was preeminent and most exalted among all of his wives. Solomon worshipped, among other gods, Ashtoreth, Astarte, Ishtar, Isis, Venus, Aphrodite, Milcom, Moloch, Shamash. These satanic rituals included human sacrifice, witchcraft, sexual orgies. Solomon built high temples in high places and altars for these pagan abominations, for all his rituals, for all his foreign wives, and joined them to burn incense and do sacrifice to their gods. It was without any doubt Solomon, not David, who adopted the hexagram as the symbol, which became known, of course, as Solomon's seal or Solomon's shield. King Solomon became a wizard or consulter of demons and was involved with forbidden occult powers of darkness, of Lucifer, Satan. So the hexagram became a prominent symbol in ancient Israel, which can be traced no farther back than Solomon himself. He adopted it from the pagan nations around him. Moloch, Shilin, Refnan, all names for the star god Saturn, whose symbol is a six-pointed star formed by two triangles. Saturn, you see, is the supreme god of the Chaldeans. The hexagram was brought to the Jewish people by King Solomon when he turned to witchcraft and idolatry after his marriage to the Pharaoh's daughter, as I said. It became known as the Seal of Solomon in Egyptian magic and witchcraft. David had absolutely nothing to do with the hexagram, and that star most certainly did not in any way represent God's people, the Jews. Solomon gave himself up to satanic worship and built altars to Ashtoreth, Moloch, who are just other forms, other names for Saturn, Satan. The hexagram faded from Jewish usage for about 2,600 years. Then, in the 1800s in Germany, it was adopted by Mayer Rothschild to mark his house. The six-pointed star was used as a Rothschild coat of arms, too. And it's difficult to pin down the date at which the six-pointed star, the hexagram, became known as the so-called Star of David. In fact, banking and financial empire of 1873, that was the earliest Jewish application of the symbol outside the Rothschilds. That was the year that the Magen David was adopted as a Jewish symbol by the American Jewish Publication Society. It's not even mentioned in the rabbinic literature searches. Other than that fact, no one seems to know when or how the occult or satanic star, the hexagram, became the Star of David. What should a Christian or observant Jew have to do with this kind of symbol? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. People are actually warned to keep that symbol out of their house. Evidence, of course, overwhelming that it's a cursed symbol, which may give demonic ground or license, all depending on the willingness of the person. The hexagram has stayed in use within the occult and prominent in rituals and worship of druids, Freemasons, astrology, New Agers, Wicca, and witches right up to this day often have this hexagram symbol as the so-called Star of David tattooed on their abdomen or on the palms of witchcraft initiates. The so-called Star of David is essentially a hexagram, nothing more, nothing less. There's no biblical or Jewish evidence that traces this ancient occult symbol with King David of Israel, but there is evidence that it was used by King Solomon after he turned to pagan gods and the occult late in his life. Pretty sobering thought that Solomon's soul would end up in hell. Here's a man to whom God appeared supposedly twice, whose father was King David, who was used by God. It's written in the Bibles for so much scripture. Proverbs, Song of Solomon, Ecclesiastes. Wow, huh? Yeah. The six-pointed star is not a Jewish symbol, but an Egyptian symbol which Israel adopted in the wilderness due to their apostasy. Now, Acts 7, verse 37. This is that Moses, to whom our fathers would not obey, but thrust him from them, and in their hearts turned back again into Egypt. And they made a calf in those days, and offered sacrifices unto the idol, and rejoiced in the works of their own hands. Then God turned, the Bible says, and gave them up to worship the host of heaven, as it is written in the book of prophets, O you house of Israel, Have ye offered to me slain beasts and sacrifices by the space of 40 years in the wilderness? Yea, ye took up the tabernacle of Moloch, and the star of your god Rephnan. Figures which ye made to worship them, and I'll carry you away from Babylon. It's also written in Amos 5, verses 26 through 27. But ye have borne the tabernacle of your Moloch and Chion, Rephnan also is named, your images, the star of your god, which you made to yourselves. Therefore I will cause you to go into captivity beyond Damascus, saith the Lord. The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia actually declares that the six-pointed star, according to the Rosicrucians, known as the ancient Egyptians, the six triangles, is the Egyptian hieroglyphic for the land of the spirits, too. In the Astro mythology and the Egyptians, you find a belief in the first man god, who is Horus, the son of Osiris, and his death and resurrection as Amsu. The six-pointed star was the first sign or hieroglyphic of Amsu. Amsu was known as the risen Horus. He was the first man god risen in spiritual form. The six-pointed star is associated with the worship of Saturn, so therefore the beast is Saturn, Satan, and his mark is the six-pointed star. Acts 7, 43. Yea, ye took up the tabernacle of Moloch, and the star of your god Rephnan, figures which you made to worship them, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon. The mark of Cain was worshipped by the Israelites in the wilderness as the star of Rephnan, which Strong's Concordance identifies as Chion. Rephnan, by incorrect transliteration for a word for of Hebrew origin, Rephan, the shrunken is what it means, as lifeless, the name of an idol worshipped secretly by the Israelites in the wilderness. How about that? You know, Strong's Concordance also has Kiyun, an image or a pillar, probably a statue of the Assyrian Babylonian god of the planet Saturn and used to symbolize Israelite apostasy. Both Chion and Saturn are identified as Cain. That's the Spaceman. This is Talk Radio, AM 640. More of our history, which we don't teach anymore in school. I wonder why. Next. I'm the guy to call the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. You can email me. Two locations, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. One of my friends writes, hi, from Flagstaff, Arizona. I've been listening to you for some years now. I've heard you many times say the news is fake or an event was staged. Now we have the President of the United States saying exactly the same thing. Could it be that Steve Bannon, who's the White House chief strategist, has been listening to A View from Space and has used that view to position Donald Trump as a voice of the people? What's your take? Signed, DR. Well, you know what? I really have to admit, the first time I ever heard Trump say fake news, I thought exactly that. But, you know, when you think about it, everyone really is now aware that there's not a lot of people that have any trust whatsoever in what I call the Illuminati-controlled mass media. I just think it was a stance that has been taken by the Trump administration to create this chaos, this illusion that he is the voice of the people and that the big corporations, the big elite world, wants him out because he's creating chaos for them. But that's exactly why he was put in the first place, to create the chaos. He's the chaos candidate that's now become the disruptive president. So back to the hexagram that was so prevalent this week. Kion, Chion is sometimes pronounced, means star. The star of Saturn was a god. Sakuth, Kaiwan, Kion. They're objects, rather, of idolatrous worship and are Assyrian gods from ancient times. In Akkadian texts, both names mean the planet or star, Saturn. Since Kion, Chion, Cain are linked with Saturn, this planetary name for Satan, the mark of Cain was the mark of Saturn, a six-pointed star. Cain, as Cain was pronounced in the ancient times, firstborn son of Satan, Samael, and Eve, the mother, and the first murderer, Cain, after having murdered his twin brother Abel, conceived with Adam as the father. Now, the tribe from which the father-in-law of Moses was a member, which lived in the area between southern Palestine and the mountains of Sinai, they were the Kenites. The Kenites, who claimed to have descent from Cain, wore the mark of the Ta cross, the letter of Saturn, on their foreheads. In this overlapping form, the Star of David is the mark of the double Messiah, the priestly Messiah, the kingly Messiah. As such, it's the only true sign of a god, and it carries the extra meaning as being the representative of the bright Star of David's line that arose in the morning. But the Star of David is the symbol of the unified Messiahship of Jesus. It should be the mark of Christianity. When the question have to be changed then the question would have to be, what is the symbol of Judaism? The answer is the cross. This is the mark of the Ta, as it's known in ancient times, and it is the shape of a cross upon which Jesus was crucified. The Ta, the mark of Yahweh, the Kenites bore on their foreheads long before Moses came across them in the wilderness. It's actually an X, you know. A cross that fell on its side. It's an X. Extricate. Excommunicate. Exit. It's all from the tribe of Cain's mark, Ta. It's the letter of Saturn. The golden dawn even worships it. Yes, you see, the Chaldean number for Saturn is 666, suggesting that the mark of Cain was a prototype of the mark of the beast, the six-pointed star received by those who will worship the god Saturn during the golden age of Saturn that's coming, the occult millennium, which was shortened to 3.5 years. Some Jewish sources also say that the mark of Cain was the seal of Solomon, or Star of David. In ancient pagan mythology, Saturn ruled over the pre-flood kingdom of Atlantis, became the divine ancestor of all earthly patriarchs and kings. Cronos, or Saturn, Dionysus, Hyperion, Atlas, Hercules, were all connected with a great Saturnian continent. They were kings that ruled over countries on the western shores of the Mediterranean, Africa, and Spain. And one account says Hyperion, Atlas, Saturn, or Cronos were sons of Uranus, who reigned over a great kingdom composed of countries around the western part of the Mediterranean with certain islands in the Atlantic. Hyperion succeeded his father and was then killed by the Titans. The kingdom was then divided between Atlas and Saturn. Atlas taking the North Africa area with the Atlantic Islands, and Saturn taking the countries on the opposite shore of the Mediterranean to Italy and Sicily and across that way. The period of Saturn's government was sung in later days by poets as a happy time when sorrows were unknown, when innocence, freedom, and gladness reigned throughout the land in such a degree as to deserve the title of the Golden Age. And that's exactly what the Illuminati are bent on bringing back. It's AVFS, this is Talk Radio, AM 640, I'm Space. There's more right after this break. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thank you for the one you sent. Appreciate it so much. I'm on about the six-pointed star at the moment. The hexagram. The flag of Israel today. That six-pointed star is engraved on a talisman of Saturn, which is used in ritual magic. That's why it reared its ugly head this week. Oh, yes. The spells were cast this week, big time, because we're getting so close to the spring equinox, which is going to be some hot time, I believe, this year. So the talisman of Saturn, on the first face is engraved a pentagram or a star with 5 points. On the other side is engraved a bull's head enclosed in a six-pointed star and is surrounded by letters composing the name Rapha, the planetary genius of Saturn, according to the alphabet of the Magi. You see, the talismans of the Magi, Theophrastus Paracelsus, revived in the 17th century the ancient doctrine of talismans, which he claimed to be able to use successfully in the treatment of illnesses and accidents. Magic. This medical doctrine was derived from the Kabbalah, or the secret tradition of the Jewish rabbis, the books of Enoch, which were said to be borrowed from the ancient occult sciences of ancient Chaldea and ancient Egypt. Yes, sun-worshipping passed on down through the ages. The talisman symbol on the image, a figure, was engraved in the form of an emblem or a symbol on metals consecrated to the what is known as the genii of the seven planets. And that's exactly what we're supposedly discovered this week. Seven planets. This magical task had to be carried out at a fixed time on a certain day with the firm intention of attracting the talisman, the beneficent influence of the genius which was involved, whether for health or any other protective measures. Sometimes called the talisman of Saturn, or the talisman of Jupiter, the talisman of Mars, talisman of the Sun, talisman of Venus, talisman of Mercury, the talisman of the Moon. These are the principal talismans whose traditions have been preserved by the most ancient monuments of the highest magical art, and by the most reliable archaeologists and this type of research, we're told. These talismans are recommended under the name Teraphim by the Hebrew Kabbalists of the Middle Ages, who replaced the names of the planetary genii of Egypt by those of Orpheel, which is also Rapha, Zachariel, which is Pi Zeus, Samael, which is Erdosil, which was the name that Satan originally had in the Garden of Eden, Michael, also known as Pyre, and Annabelle as Suroth, Raphael as Pi Hermes, and Gabriel as Pi Lo. These Kabbalists add another seven talismans to which they attribute the power of conjuring the influence of seven demons who, according to their doctrine, share with the seven planetary angels the government of the divine creation. Against the angel of Saturn, they set the demon Nabab against the angel of Jupiter, the demon Acham, against the angel of Mars, the demon Nambroth, against the angel of Venus, it's the demon Lilith or Namah, against the angel of Mercury, the demon Astaroth or Thithak, and against the angel of the moon, the demon Sathan. This is all in Judges 17 and 18 in the King James Version of the Bible. The teraphim appear to correspond to the serpent images or seraphim, which are in turn said to derive from the Kabiri Assyrian divinities worshipped by the people at Hebron. The demons or male spirits of the planets are now given by esoteric students of the Kabbalah as Adonai, meaning the sun, Ebo, meaning the moon, Saba, meaning Mars, Astaphoi, meaning Mercury, Eloi, meaning Jupiter, and Orioe, meaning Venus, and Life Baoth, according to the Ophites, Yahweh, Saturn. Now the name Saturn in Chaldee is pronounced Satur, but as every Chaldee scholar knows, consists only of four letters, S-T-U-R, almost like star, isn't it? This name contains exactly the apocalyptic number, 666. Sri Aurobindo, a Hindu guru well known in the New Age religion, affirms that Saturn is represented by the number 6 because the planet Saturn is the 6th of the 9 planets in distance from our sun. Noah was worshipped as Saturn. Oannes, the Philistine god, Dagon, all fish gods. Noah is celebrated by the name Saturn, the hidden one, it means. For that name was applied to him on account of his having been hidden in the ark in the days of the Lord's fierce anger, or Oannes. Now, out of the deluge emerges Dagon, the fish god, or god of the sea. In the secret mysteries, they sought to regain their influence and power by scientific representation of the flood, in which Noah was introduced under the name Dagon. Dagon, or Oannes, half-human, half-fish man combination, who was known as the Lord of the Flood, was said to rise out of the sea every day to teach his secret knowledge to those who followed him. He's mentioned in Samuel 5, chapter 5, in the King James Version of the Bible, when the Philistines captured the Ark of the Covenant and placed it in the temple of Dagon. Two nights later, Dagon was fallen upon his face to the ground before the Ark of the Lord, and the head of Dagon and both he and the palms of his hands were cut off upon the threshold. Only the stump of Dagon was left to him. It's this character upon which Satan or Lucifer is actually based, but the physical description attributed to him applies to an entire race of gods, or as they were described in the King James Version of the Bible, the Nephilim, fallen angels, the great old ones, they're also called. Dagon, the fish god, associated with the forehead and hands, the location of the mark of the beast. Dagon's crown was the top of a six-pointed star. Revelation 13:1 states, "And I saw the beast rise up out of the sea." Revelation 13:16, "A mark in their right hand or in their foreheads." Just what Hiob described about the ancient occult practices. 1 Samuel 5, verse 4. "And then they rose early in the morrow morning. Behold, Dagon was fallen upon his face to the earth before the ark of the Lord, and the head of Dagon and both of the palms of his hands were cut off upon the threshold. Only did the stump of Dagon was left to him." In the mystery religions, both the forehead and the hands were tattooed during rites of initiation. Did you know that? The reason was because of Dagon's hands and head were cut off. A copy. A repeat of history. Concerning Mithraism, sun worship, initiation was performed by two dignitaries who possessed the title of father and herald. After the ceremony, the initiate would be considered the brother of the other initiates and the son of the father. In order to recognize by the father, he had to be tattooed, in other words, branded. Where? On both hands. On portraits of emperors, for instance, these tattoo marks are clearly visible on the forehead or on the place of the hands. Now, the tattoo bonds the initiate with the entity symbolized by the tattoo, you see, and enables him to communicate with that demonic power. If you study voodoo, you'll find the witch doctors, the ancient witch doctors, had tattoos all over their bodies. And some of them were, there was no bare skin left. They were all colored, tattooed. Because the tattoos are actually the names and symbolisms of the demons that have been allowed in to that voodoo witch doctor that he allowed into his soul. So all of the names are written on his body in tattoo form. Still going to get that tattoo? You want it? In some pictures of a tattooed man, we're faced by a permanent power to and identification with the heavenly powers, at the same time as a basic means of communication with them. Such is the most generalized meaning of tattooing. Bestowed in consequence of a rite of initiation, which allows the communication with the demon to take place. At the same time, this initiation is a rite of admission into a social group too, and the tattoo is also the permanent mark of that initiation, the badge of the tribe. I believe that when the mark comes, that the Bible talks about, it will be electronic ink, a tattoo. Because the Hollywood stars are now showing how fashionable it is to have a tattoo. All in all, tattooing belongs among symbols of identification and is interfused with all their magic and mystic potency. Identification always carries a double meaning. It tends to invest the individual concerned with the properties and strength of the creature or thing to which that person is assimilated with, and at the same time to immunize the latter against its potential power to cause harm. Because you see, the demon will destroy you if you're not very careful on how you use them. This is why tattoos depict dangerous creatures such as serpents, scorpions, or animals which are symbols of fertility, like bulls of power, like lions, and so on. Dragons. Identification also carries a sense of surrender, or even of consecration, to whatever the tattoo symbolically depicts. It then becomes a badge of fealty. What is that? Meaning the obligation of a believer to worship his Lord. A six-pointed star was used in mystery religion initiation rites for millennia. In an ancient book on numbers, the initiate is defined as the one who has experienced and expressed 666 and found it not, who has dropped the 6 and becomes the 66, thus found himself on the way. Later again, he drops the 6 and becomes the perfect 6 form, the instrument and expression of the spirit. The this is the sign with which the Magus decorated himself when he had reached the highest degree of initiation. A Magus was a member of a hereditary priestly class in the ancient times among the ancient Medes and Persians. Notice it's hereditary? Yes. The secret bloodline keeping the power of control within the Illuminati families. This is always the way it's been done throughout history. I get into the Crown of the Magi next. Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm Space. It's AVFS. I'm the guy to call Space. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Thanks for the one that you've sent. I'm starting to get into the Crown of the Magi now. Now, King Solomon reintroduced the six-pointed star to the kingdom of Israel. The talisman of Saturn became known as the Seal of Solomon. The hexagram. Solomon's blatant idolatry had angered the Lord of the Bible, the King James Version of the Bible, to the point of bringing about the division of the kingdom of Israel. Part of the evidence is the six-pointed star, which was called the Seal of Solomon from then on. Here's a look at some of those false gods with which he was involved. First mentioned was Ashtoreth, mentioned early in the show, otherwise called Astarte. The words mean star. 2 Kings, verse 23, line 13, is explicit. And the high places that were before Jerusalem, which were on the hand of the mount of corruption which Solomon the king of Israel had built for Ashtoreth, the abomination of the Sidonians, and for Chemosh, the abomination of the Moabites, and for Milcom, the abomination of the children of Ammon, did the king defile. King Solomon built an altar for Ashtoreth, worshipped her, also practiced Moloch rituals. And it was at this time that the hexagram or six-pointed star came to be called the Seal of Solomon. The Seal of Solomon, or six-pointed star, hexagram, as you know it, was considered an all-powerful talisman, especially when accompanied by the Hebrew Yod. It was also combined with the Ta cross, or crux ansata, in the center. How did the dictionaries define hexagram? The root word hex is defined as an evil spell. A secondary definition, a witch. To bewitch. That's from Funk and Wagnall's dictionary. Solomon's seal was accepted as occult by the occult world. King Solomon was deeply involved in witchcraft and occultism, had all of the black arts knowledge that is being used on you today, passed down since those ancient times to the ones who call themselves the Illuminati, our overlords of this world. According to the Sorcerer's Handbook, King Solomon, traditionally known as an arch-magician, used a spell to banish infernal beings sent by the king of demons to extract human hearts. The names of those demons are then given. The Seal of Solomon is a graphical representation of the number 666, the number of the beast. And Solomon is actually the man whose number is 666. Here's wisdom for you. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for the number is of a man, and his number is 666. Revelation 13:18. Now the weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents of gold. Exactly what was described in Revelation 13:18 a moment ago when I read it. This other line is in 1 Kings 10:14. The fundamental doctrine of magic is phallicism. New life is created by the act of sex generation. Now you know why they call it space sex. that Elon Musk company. So the Illuminati believe, therefore, that the life force is generated by sexual forces, the union of male and female elements, as represented by the two opposing equilateral triangles being pushed or joined together as the hexagram. The triangle with the broad base up is the male principle, the spirit of fire. Red in color. The triangle with the broad base down is the female principle, spirit of water, Jehovah. This symbolic representation of which is a sexual union. Interestingly enough, you're going to notice that the emblem is made up of three pairs of triangles with their apexes all touching. Each pair collectively representing the number six, which qualifies the whole symbol as a graphical representation of 666. Solomon's seal, the symbolical double triangle, was adopted by the Theosophical Society and many theosophists. The pentagram is the triple triangle, the six-pointed star being the hexagram. The way a triangle points determines its meaning. If it's upwards, it means the male element and divine fire. Downwards, the female and the waters of matter. Upright, but with a bar across the top, air and astral light. Downwards with a bar, the earth or gross matter. Solomon used his seal ring to communicate with evil spirits. His seal ring, of course, the hexagram. The legend that Solomon possessed a seal ring on which the name of God was engraved and by means of which he controlled the demons is told in a legend. This legend is especially developed by Arabic writers who declare that the ring on which was engraved the most great name of God, and which was given to Solomon from heaven, was partly brass and partly iron. With the brass part of the ring, Solomon signed his written commands to the good genii, demons, and with the iron part, he signed his commands to the evil genii, or devils. The Arabic writers declare also that Solomon received four jewels from four different angels, and that he set them in one ring so that he could actually control the four elements. You've seen that in cartoons, I'm sure, with the big flashy ring, showing and teaching the children this occult theme. The legend that Asmodeus once obtained possession of the ring and threw it into the sea, and that Solomon was thereby deprived of his power until he discovered the ring inside of a fish. It's also as an Arabic source, this legend. The legend of a magic ring by means of which the possessor could exorcise demons was current in the first century, as shown by Josephus' statement that one man called Eleazar exorcised demons in the presence of Vespasian by means of a ring, using incantations composed by Solomon Fabricius. Some think that the legend of the ring of Solomon thrown into the sea and found afterward inside a fish is derived from the story of the ring of Polycrates, a story which is related by Herodotus and others, and which was the basis of Schiller's poem Der Ring des Polycrates. Solomon's seal is now used as a talisman by all occultists. Any geometrical shape, especially that known as the double equilateral triangle, the six-pointed star, like the theosophical pentacle, also called Solomon's seal, and still earlier the sign of Vishnu, has been used by all the mystics, all the astrologers through the history of time. The mark of the beast will be the symbol of the beast out of the sea with seven heads, which will be the earthly counterpart of Satan, the man who becomes God, the seven-headed dragon. And there appeared another wonder in the heavens, and behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan. Revelation 12, 3, 9. The seven-headed dragon and beast of the book of Revelation have their origin in the seven-headed serpent, which is mentioned in the pyramid text. It is Satan who is the god of our planet and the only god. In the order of divine evolution, Saturn, also known as Satan, astronomically, is the seventh and last in the order of macrocosmic emanations. The Saturnian spirit, who is Satan, and souls the third great major or primary ray of deity. Yes. The Illuminati are going to stick to the King James Version of the Bible's revelation to the very letter to bring about their world government. It's a spaceman. This is Talk Radio AM 640. There's more to come right after this break. I'm the guy that calls space. It's a view from space on Talk Radio AM 640. That's all it is. You can email me, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Now, between the 5th and 7th centuries, there was a lot happening. This Bysti Neptunus, symbolically defined in the Merovingian ancestry, reveals itself. The relevant sea lord was King Pallas, a god of old Arcadia, the original homeland of the tribe of Cain. His predecessor was the great Oceanus. The immortal sea lord was said to be ever incarnate in a dynasty of ancient kings whose symbol was a fish. Supposedly ruled Atlantis. Now, between the 5th and 7th centuries, this Merovingian bloodline ruled large parts of France and Germany. The ruler from whom the Merovingians derived their name is Merovi, of course. Talked about many times on this show. A semi-supernatural figure worthy of classical myth. His name echoes the French word for sea, which is mer. Merovi. Merovi's mother supposedly went swimming in the ocean, you see. In the water, she is said to have been seduced or raped by a beast of Neptune. A sea beast. Merovingian dynasty, the male line, are descendants of the fisher kings. The seven heads represents the seven kings of seven Gentile world kingdoms controlled by Satan, which have all conquered Israel. And here's something to give you a little wisdom. The seven heads are seven kings. Five have fallen. One is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue for a short time. And the beast that was and is not, even he, is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. Revelation 17, verses 9-11. You see, the seven Gentile world kingdoms worshipped the beast out of the sea in the form of a fish god who ruled the pre-flood world, which was Atlantis. Five have fallen. Egypt, number one. Horus the first represents the soul of life, which came by water to a dried up world. Here's the fish. The fish was a sign of his incorporation in matter. Horus came by water as Ichthus, the fish before there was a boat or ark. the inundation of the Nile was the source of the life of Egypt. It was her annual salvation, Egypt's, and Horus, the fishman, was her savior. Horus, of course, the son of Osiris, the very first sun god worshipped in ancient Egypt. The second kingdom was Babylon. In Babylon, Capricorn symbolized the dual life of Ea, a god often shown walking in a great fish-shaped cloak with a head of a fish over its own head. It was said to have come from the ocean to teach men on how to live. This is exactly how the garb looks that the Pope parades around in 2017. The fish-shaped cloak with the head of a fish over his own head. He wears a fish hat. The third was Assyria. In the great Assyrian temple of Assur stood a large stone ritual basin dedicated to the god Oannes. Flanking him were four fish-clad priests. This is illustrated in an etching from Assyria, 7th century BC, and they are fish-clad priests. The fourth, Medo-Persia. Dagon, under the name Mithra, was worshipped. In Mithraic mysteries, Saturn was the sun god. The fifth, Greece. Jerome calls Dagon fish of sorrow, which goes far to identify that fish god with Bacchus. One is Imperial Rome. Now, the Roman god Saturn, known as Cronos to the Greeks, was the king of Atlantis. Saturn wandered to Italy, where he ruled as king in the Golden Age and gave the name Certinia to the country. Uranus was deposed from the throne of Atlantis and succeeded by his son Cronos. So we've seen Cronos identified with the Atlantic, called by the Romans the Cronian Sea even. He was known to the Romans under the name and ruled over a great Saturnian continent in the Western Ocean. And the one is yet to come, Papal Rome. About the very time when the Bishop of Rome was invested with the pagan title of Pontifex, the Savior began to be called Ichthus of the fish, thereby identifying him with Dagon and the Merovingian family of fish kings. The two-horned meter, or hat, which the Pope, as I've already said, of the Roman Catholic Church wears, is the very meter, or hat, worn by Dagon. The kings, who were controlled by Satan, king of Tyre. Ezekiel 28:2 states, "Son of man, say unto the prince of Tyre, Thus saith the Lord God, because thine heart is lifted up, and thou hast said, I am a god. I sit in the seat of God in the midst of the seas, yet thou art a man." Ezekiel 28:12 states, "Son of man, take up lamentation upon the king of Tyrus. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth." Now, the king of Egypt, mentioned in Ezekiel 29:3, "Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I am against thee, Pharaoh, king of Egypt, the great dragon that lieth in the midst of the rivers." In the pyramid texts, the king was seen as the sun and embodiment of the solar deity, the sun. In this capacity, he was the earthly representative of the sun and the high priest of his heavenly father, Ra. He was the god in human form. And Osiris was the very first Egyptian pharaoh to call himself a god in human form representing the sun. The king of Babylon, in Babylonia, the ruler who was regarded as actually the manifestation of the deity. The eighth beast, the kingdom of Israel, under the Merovingian false Christ, who will soon rule as the reincarnated King Solomon, this time will be rule over the entire world. The insignia of the Merovingian dynasty is the hexagram, the six-pointed star. The coat of arms of Rennes-le-Château, a Merovingian castle there in the south of France, is a black triangle entwined with a white triangle that is exactly the same as the seal of Solomon. The window at Alette Cathedral near Rennes-le-Château is also in the same shape as the Star of David. The Rothschild insignia, the six-pointed star, became the Zionist symbol, which is now the official flag of Israel. Finally, the State of Israel was created by the United Nations, the year 1948. Its symbol, the six-pointed star, adorns the Israeli Knesset and flies on the flag of Israel. Looking back, the six-pointed star was an Egyptian occult symbol, which King Solomon adopted when he went into idolatry, witchcraft practice, and built an altar for Ashtoreth in that time. It was seen in Arab associations with Jews, and these were obviously Kabbalists, till the 16th century and the influence of the Kabbalist Isaac Luria, to the 17th century when Mayor Amschel Bauer Rothschild used it on his door as his insignia. Then he changed his family name from Bauer to Rothschild, importing and incorporating the Seal of Solomon into his new family name's coat of arms. And finally, it became the insignia for Zionism. So as I said, there's no evidence to connect the hexagram with David, his father, King David. There's no reason to believe that David, a man after God's own heart, would ever adopt a satanic occult or pagan symbol for his shield. But Satan, the devil, the chief of liars and deceivers, would certainly love to have you think so. It's recorded in Revelation 12, verse 9, and in John in Chapter 8, verse 44. Oh, yes. As I said before, the Illuminati are going to follow the King James Version of that Bible. More right after this break. This is ABFS on AM 640. I'm the guy they call a spaceman. Talk radio, AM 640. I communicate by email only. No website. Got no Twitter account. I have not even got a cell phone. I have that small cyber footprint. I'm going to use the software when I got to go to work. That's all. And it keeps my head pretty clear. Or so I feel it does. Now, there is a Masonic book called The Second Mile, an Eastern Star book, reveals the six-pointed star. The hexagram is a very ancient symbol and one of the most powerful. It's used in magic, witchcraft, sorcery, as I've been saying, and occultism, and the casting of zodiacal horoscopes by astrologers even. It was even considered to possess mysterious powers. The six-pointed star is used by magicians, alchemists through the centuries. Sorcerers believed it represented the footprints of a special kind of demon called a trud. Now, the hexagram has been used in ceremonies both to call up demons and to keep them away. The six-sided or hexagram star is revered as a religious symbol by the Hebrews, who call it the Seal of Solomon, and the Hindus, they call it the mark of Vishnu, a god-man who was half man, half fish, the Nomos. From Sirius, the Dog Star. The Seal of Solomon is also remarkably similar to the symbol used by the Raelians, who aren't heard of much anymore, but are a cult who believe that scientists from another planet created all life on Earth using DNA. This DNA, as they call it, man trying to find out how life is formed, then copy it themselves, which they will never be able to do. But here's what the Illuminati believe about DNA. DNA, the ancient Kabbalistic tree of life, portrayed in the biblical Torah, is now becoming to be viewed as a live, vibrating structure. Many modern scientists see DNA as a shimmering waveform configuration able to be modified by light, radiation, magnetic fields, for instance, or sonic pulses. The legacy of Thoth, Enoch, suggests that this language of light, the harmonic black art science of the ancients, could actually affect DNA. Enter sacred geometry. The Illuminati use that as well as astrology and numerology to deceive and cast their black magic spells. They believe the Merkaba spirals us by virtue of our DNA out of this reality and spirals us, spins us from one reality to another. Six pairs of twin strands. Six is the Star of David and Merkaba. 12 strands, matching the 12 tribes of Israel. We all have a Merkaba field around us, we're told. We supposedly use it to connect with the higher dimensions. It is the divine light vehicle when you're enlightened, used by the masters to connect with and reach those in tune with the higher realms. This also balances our yin-yang, our duality, our polarity, our electromagnetic energies, we're told. In sacred mystery schools, sacred geometrical exercises were the basis of their beliefs. It was understood that in order to transform your physical body into light, that you had to create an energy field of light around you in order to separate yourself from the lower vibrations. The Merkaba is the vehicle of light mentioned in the Bible by Ezekiel. Mer means light. Ka means spirit. Ba means body. Merkaba rotates when activated. The Merkaba means the spirit body, surrounded by counter-rotating fields of light. Wheels within wheels, if you like, spirals of energy as in DNA, which transports the spirit, the body, from one dimension to another. Now, the Merkaba can take on many forms of light. It's made up of two-star tetrahedrons. The Merkaba can connect into the grid systems of the Earth, the elites believe, the Christ grid and other grid systems. The Merkaba serves to balance all chakras and lead a person into a whole brain synchronization. In other words, enlightens you. Merkaba meditation incorporates pranic breathing techniques, as they're called, which brings life forces, life energy, directly into the body. Now, there's a connection between DNA and the Star of David, believe it or not. The merge of the hourglass becomes the Star of David, does it not? Which is the spiraling frequency of ascension. 12 is about time, or the illusion thereof, created by the energies of the Great Pyramid, combined with its ethereal twin. One triangle above another, forced together, gives you the hexagram, pyramid twins, the hourglass thing, in time. Like pi in numbers, the way our souls spiral into consciousness, the spirals, the golden spirals from alchemy. The slinky effect, the DNA. Is the spiral reversing now? According to the Hopi Star prophecy, Speaking of twin Chakinas, white and blue, twins, merging of self, twin pyramids, DNA, twin towers imploding, referring to the Kundalini. The answer is yes. There's more right after this on Talk Radio, AM 640. This is A View from Space. I'm Space. I'm a spaceman. I communicate by email only. Spaceman at 640toronto.com. One address, the other space at 640toronto.com. J.H. writes, I'm Haitian, spaceman, and I got no tattoos. Thanks a lot. You know what the official national religion of Haiti is, don't you? It's voodoo. And voodoo is, of course, contacting the demons and asking them in to inhabit your body, to possess you. And then you get the tattoo on the outer part of your skin, naming that demon that you asked in. J.H. got no tattoos. Survived Haiti. Okay, so what I was saying before the break, according to the Hopi Star Prophecy, which I've told many times here on this radio show through the years, the Hopi Prophecy speaks of twin Kachinas, as they're called, white and blue in color. Twin, the merging of the self, twin pyramids, DNA, twin towers imploding. You see, it's the Kundalini, a place of global communication, the Twin Towers once in New York. Didn't fall, they imploded. They merged into each other. This was a wake-up call for humanity from the elites. Changing the world forever in one afternoon. With the Twin Tower implosion. Very spiritual in meaning. You see, the Great Pyramid is a double helix. The Rainbow Bridge also is DNA, Jacob's Ladder. The Tree of Life, as our gods of this world see it, the Illuminati, the Twin Serpents, representing the Twin Towers in New York that day, are said to be represented the Ida and the Pingala. The two tunnels are pathways of psychic energy which reside in the body, which channel and regulate the flow of psychic energy. This flow must become balanced into a central tube for the Kundalini, the spiritual energy of the body, to flow safely. The Kundalini is directly augmented or suppressed in the body by the patterns of breath, of breathing that each person uses. It's strengthened by meditation. To be made whole, complete, Osiris must have this pillar, or as wife of the divine marriage, as in the chemical wedding. This is describing what happens when the Kundalini, the spiritual energy, rises through the chakras of the human body to the pituitary gland in the head, just between the eyes, and joins the cosmic energy of the pineal gland to form the divine marriage. Enlightenment. After undergoing numerous initiation, the initiate attains enlightenment symbolized by the presence of the elect, or the 144,000, and full functioning DNA. When the individual has mastered their own individual flow of energy and unsealed or opened each chakra and its corresponding system of biochemical and organic energy, they must then face the final struggle, or Armageddon, which is the prerequisite for attaining the eighth level of psychic power. The eighth level is the final level. The Sun Worshipper's number, of course. The fully enlightened individual thus attains the Christ consciousness, which 888 symbolizes. They master the physical. They master the metaphysical laws of karma, which is how the person becomes immortal and is freed from the necessity to reincarnate. I've told you many times. Seventh heaven. The eighth reincarnation, of which there are, in an initiate's life, on his way to becoming God, seven times he is reincarnated here on the earth, and the eighth time he becomes a god. You see, the 64 elements, condensed of the DNA, are the total of 20 amino acids with varying quantities in this 64 condens plus 2 and 1 stop condon. Kabbalah and the tarot cards both describe a belief system with 22 elements. The crop circle cards also use a similar system in the occult. 4 is the most used number in the whole universe. 3 dimensions of space and 1 of time. 1 is always different, opposite polarity, working as a centerpiece of the other 3. On this level, we have gravity, 1, electromagnetic, 2, the weak atomic force, 3, and the strong atomic force, 4. That's the science of bonding atoms into molecules, by the way. And then we have the elements of the earth. Earth, 1, water, 2, fire, 3, air, 4. How about this? In DNA, cytosine, thiamine, adenine, guanine, all nines at the end, if you'll notice. Fundamental building blocks of DNA. There's 4 of them. 4 is the number of foundation. And of course, the gases in our world. Nitrogen, 1. Carbon, 2. Hydrogen, 3. Oxygen, 4. So, cytosine, thymine, adenine, guanine, the 4 building blocks of life in DNA. So, which dimension are we on right now? Bear with me, because this gets really good. Taken from Isaiah and Daniel, "For in the sky the stars and Orion will shed their light no longer. The sun will be dark when it rises, and the moon will no longer give its light. I am going to shake the heavens," Messiah speaking, "will give a sigh to the nations. Michael will then appear. The Son of Man will come on the clouds of heaven, and the Messiah shall gather the lost ones of Israel from the 4 corners of the earth." The second coming happens within, believe the Illuminati. The throne of God is a sacred geometrical symbol, they believe, for the golden mean, and represents the seat or basis for the created world and rebirth, moving from 4 to 5, which equals life. It's actually 9 in mathematics, Satan's favorite number. The phrase 12-strand DNA is a metaphor linked to sacred geometry, and the digital code is 12, 12. 12 around one source, returning to source and a new creation at this time. Could it be the double helix, our so-called foundation, as the 2 tribes of Israel, Judah and Benjamin? We lost the original full-functioning DNA multidimensional reality, but the other 10 tribes of Israel are being returned to us, symbolically, of course. The 12 tribes of Israel by birth date went this way. Reuben, first. Simeon, second. Judah, third. Dan, fourth. Naphtali, 5. Gad, 6. Asher, 7. Issachar, 8. Zebulun, 9. Benjamin, 10. Manasseh, 11. And Ephraim, 12. Implosion of the Twin Towers in New York, the Twin Double Helix and Kundalini's Ida and the Pingala. The two tunnels are pathways of psychic energy. When balanced, they become one. Central tube, opening the door for full DNA connection. That was part of the ritual, September of 2001. On the 11th day. It's about connecting to the sacred. It's the Illuminati's job to connect to the 12 tribes of Israel, the full DNA, return to source, and new creation to be birthed. But just how are they going to do that, you ask? Jacob's pillar stone, or stone of destiny, equals DNA. Jacob used a stone for a pillow. In the Bible story, if you'll recall, the night he wrestled with God after God changed his name to Israel, he then used it as a pillar to mark the covenant he made with God. Tradition has it that the stone, Jacob's pillar stone or stone of destiny, was taken to Egypt and later to the promised land when the Israelites came out of Egypt. Yes, the ring lords are going to return with this Jacob's pillar stone in tow. It's called Leofael in Ireland, Jacob's pillar stone, used as his pillow upon which Jacob saw his vision from God in a place he called Bethel, which means in Hebrew the house of God. The stone from that moment was predestined to become Christ's throne on earth, and it was taken by Jacob and his children into Egypt. 400 years later, during the Exodus from Egypt under Moses and the wilderness 40-year punishment, wandering, the Leofael was carried on a pole until the Israelites conquered Canaan and built Jerusalem. The Leofael, or Stone of Destiny as it's known today, then became the throne of King David, who slew Goliath the giant with a stone from his sling. Every one of the succeeding kings from David's line were crowned upon this Leofael, this Jacob's pillar, this Stone of Destiny, which was kept in God's house, the holy temple built by David's son, King Solomon, on Mount Moriah, in Jerusalem, until King Zedekiah was overthrown by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon for breaking that covenant. Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon's soldiers destroyed Solomon's holy temple on Mount Moriah, which was the holiest place on earth because it is where Abraham, centuries before, had offered to sacrifice his miracle son, Isaac, for God. Ezekiel 21:26 states, "Thus saith the Lord, I am. Remove the diadem," sovereignty meaning there, "and take off the crown. This shall not be the same. Exalt him that is now low," meaning the line of Zarah, "and abase him that is high," the line of Pharez. You've got to know who Zarah and Pharez are. Ezekiel 21:27. "I will overturn, and it shall be no more, until he comes whose right it is, and I will give it to him," Shiloh, the Christ. That's in Genesis. From Egypt, the stone was shipped through Sicily, Spain, and then finally to Ireland before arriving in Scotland, and finally placed on the throne of England. The final overturn before Christ returns, theft of stone in Westminster Abbey in 1950, before Queen Elizabeth's coronation in 53. The Queen of Israel, defender of the faith, Elizabeth II. I'm right back, and I'll pick up the story there on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS. That's the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640, a view from space. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. I've been talking about the Stone of Destiny, where every British king from the beginning has been crowned while standing upon this stone or having the stone underneath, the Stone of Destiny, underneath the throne. It was originally under the throne of King David, who slew Goliath the giant with a stone from his sling, if you'll recall that Bible story. Now, the British history is incredible with this Leofail, this Stone of Destiny. As I said before the break, originally came from Egypt. Then it was shipped through Sicily, Spain. Then moved to Ireland. And then arrived in Scotland. And finally placed in the throne of England, which is going to be the final overturn before Christ returns, the final place before Christ returns. Theft of the stone in Westminster Abbey in 1950 has been actually publicized. But before Queen Elizabeth's coronation in 1953, she was still coronated with that stone. I believe there are two stones. One is the imposter stone that keeps moving around, and there's the real one, which is kept in a very sacred, secret place. Elizabeth II is not descended from the royal line of David from the tribe of Judah. That is a lie. They are imposters, and from the tribe of Dan, I believe, the tribe of Cain. But Prince William and Harry related legitimately to all the kings and queens that Britain ever had because of their mother, Princess Diana, who was a Spencer. The Spencers are related to Mary, Queen of Scots, the true heir to the British throne, now the highest royal family of the occult Cain tribe, is mixed with the House of David through sex. Now you know why sex, reproduction, is the key. The British history of the Stone of Scone, this Stone of Destiny, Leofail, it's called in Ireland, which every monarch Britain ever had was coronated with under their throne, goes like this. There are two stones, I believe, called the Stone of Destiny. One is obviously not the genuine Stone of Destiny, but is a fake, presumably made by Baal Burl Grey. Then there's the connection with Columba of Kells and Iona being guardian of the stone, because the Leofail, you see, was allegedly kept in Columba's church in Dundee until the authorities found out and sealed up the building with the alleged real Leofail stone still inside it. It was then rescued by the Knights Templar, who were said to have it secreted away, hidden in Adam Nunn's church at Dull in Perthshire. Yet again, we have the link with Columba, because Adam Nunn's church is built into the grave mound of Adam Nunn, who wrote The Life of Columba around 685 AD, shortly after Columba's death. Columba is confirmed by his prophecy titled Cenaeus, in which the physical second coming of Christ to be king in Ireland is foretold, an event that will finally defeat the English Davidic monarchy, unite Ireland under Christ's sovereignty, and bring peace and prosperity finally to all of its people. So states the King James Version of the Bible. The Illuminati are going to follow this Bible to the letter, as I've said. There is a Stone of Destiny on display today at Edinburgh Castle, but is that the original? I think not. In ancient Irish religion and mythology, Tara was also the sacred home for the Ari. Later, the Irish, or as we know them today, the Irish, who rank below the lily gods, yet above the people. Ireland, or Ireland, takes its name from the Ares, the lion, the Ilion in Hebrew, or Arians. Ireland is considered the great mother of the Arian race, otherwise known as a part of Atlantis, or Tula. Now, Abraham had two sons, Isaac and Ishmael. Ishmael lived 137 years. Genesis 25:17 records that. He had 12 sons who became the founders of Ishmaelite tribes that spread from Egypt to what is today's Iraq. A lot of the modern-day Arab peoples correctly recognize that they are the descendants of Ishmael, while the Jews and the rest of the Israelites are descendants of Isaac. But all are descended from Abraham. Israelite is the ethnic group claiming a covenant with God and descent from Abraham and Isaac, especially from Isaac's son Jacob. Israel, also called, from Judah's son Phares, the so-called firstborn. Judah's other son, Zara, and I told you, you've got to know who Zara and Phares are. Judah's other son, Zara, of the Zaraites, populated Spain and the northern Mediterranean, the Tojans, and the isles afar off, the British and Emerald Islands. Like in Ireland, joining their cousins, the Danites, Dan is Jacob's fifth son. One group is not better than the other. This is symbolic. It's about connecting the sacred. The Illuminati believe they must uncover the truth and connect to our true history and true lineage. Simply put, this is an excuse to form a one-world government. They'll say it's God's plan when it's really the plan of Saturn, Satan. Through this plan, they believe many will experience paradise, the land of milk and honey, through the power of their thought forms and consciousness. This ability is called the crossing. Its root is from the Hebrew crossing the River Jordan into the paradise and into the Red Sea, and then into freedom, the most likely origin of the word Ibri. Hebrew is taken from br, meaning to cross over a boundary. Included in this thought is that a Hebrew would be one who crossed over, or one who went from place to place. A nomad, a traveler, a wanderer, a stranger, an alien. How does the living language of light fit in? Coming up next on Talk Radio AM 640 with a spaceman, it's AVFS. More next. I'm the guy that calls space. Talk Radio AM 640, it's AVFS. Communicate by email, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. I was talking to you before the break about the living language of light. It was known to the ancients as Hebrew. According to Michael Zarian, the seat of religion and civilization is founded in the ancient British Isles where the Druids once ruled. He believes the real Hebrews were the ancient Irish and use the Celts and use etymology, the meaning of words, of many Gaelic Celtic words and scholars, to back up his claim. Meath, Ireland, was home of the Druid councils, and Tara, the capital, the seat of the high chieftains of ancient Ireland. And as one of their leading beliefs, souls are not annihilated, but pass after death from one body to another. And they hold that by this teaching, men are much encouraged to valor through disregarding the fear of death. Because they believe they'll just be reincarnated again. They also discuss and impart of their young many things concerning the heavenly bodies and their movements, the size of the world and our earth, natural sciences, and the influence and power of the immortal gods. Julius Caesar had those thoughts on the Druids that he wrote in his Gallic Wars writings. The Irish are one of the most ancient nations that I know of at this end of the world and are from as mighty a race as the world has ever brought forth. So says Edward Spencer, the writer and British government official in Ireland in the year 1596. There had been smoke screens that had been maintained around Ireland since the English invasion and the consequent looting that went on in the island, with the destruction of her sacred shrines too, which was meant to obscure Ireland's great past and her contribution in letters, science, culture, true religion, and civilization. It goes without saying that the world owes a lot more to ancient Ireland, Erie, as it was called in those days, for those blessings, than to any other people or nation. So says the author Conor McDarry, who of course is Irish. Because the Egyptian artifacts are found in remote regions of Ireland, people wonder how Easterners could have traveled across the sea in boats which are not meant to have had. How could they navigate the seas and oceans and come to such a place so far away, and then live and die there, and leave their remains behind them? These questions that puzzled those who have bought the lies propagated by the Illuminati concerning the ancient world, the fact that Egyptian relics are found in Ireland, or that Irish relics, like the Ohio Serpent Mound, round towers, are found in the Americas. The Illuminati are embarking on a plan that will unravel all these lies, they say, and reveal their truth about mankind as to his destiny and his true purpose. The truth remains that the word Hebrew referred only to the root language of the word Gaelic, to the cult of Druid priests whose astromantic knowledge brought enlightenment to all corners of the earth. It was only much later in history that the world's connotative and denotative meanings were taken falsely, made to refer to ethnic and racial status. The proof for this identity theft still exists and is indisputable. Adders, snakes, meant the Druid magi. This word comes from the Gaelic nadrid, meaning serpent, or from the earlier nadr. This G-N word, G-N-A-D-R, nadr, is also the prefix of gnosis, from the Greek meaning esoteric knowledge of spiritual truth held by the ancient occultists to be essential to salvation. Gnosis, learning how to become a god through knowledge, is gnosis. Now, GN becomes KN in modern times. G or GN is the symbol of the wise ones who worship the serpent. This is the reason why Masons employ the G in the center of their compass and their ruler, which signifies measurement. Ergo, knowledge. The letter symbol G of the Masons may also be taken from the word genonym, the elite members of the Judaic Talmudic schools in ancient Babylon. But since the Egyptians and Semites got all their sacred knowledge from the Druids, the earlier idea is probably the correct one. When all said and done, when the G, when written in lowercase, clearly references the serpent. Saturn, Satan. The High King of ancient Ireland was called Nuada. This name comes from Nadrid and means wise serpent. The ruler or chieftain in ancient Ireland as well as in Egypt was a master of all the arts, a semi-enlightened being. And the word Hebrew didn't relate to a particular race, but to ones they called the wise ones, originally the Ibaru, or the Ibrach of Ireland, and later of Egypt. These were an ancient race of arch-magi who worshipped the stars and the zodiac, sun worshippers, who had churches all over the world. It was incredibly important for the ones who controlled the modern church to obscure, to hide the existence and origin of these high priests of the sun while their sun-worshipping Masonic ways were quietly incorporated into true Christianity. It was done in a couple of ways, which caused all the confusion. Conscious mistranslation and the deliberate misspelling of the nouns. So the first attempt at tricking people with certain words concerns the Gaelic word Ibrach. The word is the origin of Hebrew. Ibrach, Hebrew. The letter H was placed before the Gaelic word to disguise its original meaning, thus giving us Hebraic or Hebrew. The second deception had to do with what they say is a chance similarity between the words Ibaru and the words Apuru. It was allowed to be, let's call it, conveniently and surreptitiously, meaning cleverly hidden, so no one would notice, turned into a name for a race of people. The ancient word Apiru can be found in ancient Sumerian, Assyrio-Babylonian, and Egyptian texts. It meant a wanderer, an immigrant, or an undesirable person or group of people. It was used to name those who were living within the borders of a sovereign country, but who were a disturbance, a nuisance, a problem, who weren't wanted. It may also have come from the word uber, or over, which also means passers-by or travelers, to those without a homeland. Apiru is also thought to have been the name for farmers or shepherds. This connotation allowed some scholars to actually assign the name Hebrews to the invaders known to the Egyptian as the Hyksos people. I believe the Hyksos were the tribe of Cain, with knowledge of the ancient black arts. There's a lot of confusion over the origins of the race of the Hyksos, who once conquered Egypt, by the way, and reigned there for almost 200 years. The word Hyksos actually means shepherd king, and some say was only used to describe the leader or king and not the whole tribe or race. They were Phoenicians, the Hyksos kings. According to some scholars, were certainly not Hebrews or Israelites. But as I say, I believe these people were, in fact, of the ancient tribe of Dan. This is the blood lineage of the union between Satan and Eve in the Garden of Eden. This group of ferocious, warlike people were the first ones to circumnavigate the globe on the oceans by the stars and were the first to use horses in battle in that area of the Middle East. A distinct advantage, wouldn't you agree? Soldiers on horses. I also connect them with Poseidon, the supreme god of Atlantis, who is the god of the seas, and also has the horse as one of his symbols, as he was the very first ever to train a horse, to domesticate a horse, to be ridden and use it in battle. Became the modern-day tank of those days. This ancient knowledge was handed down to the Hyksos from their ancestors, who were from Atlantis. The real Hebrews, the wise ones, were the Irish. That next, it's Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm the Spaceman, it's AVFS. I'm the guy they call Spaceman, it's a view from space, that's all it is. On Talk Radio, AM 640, I communicate by email. spaceman@640toronto.com, one address, the other space@640toronto.com. So if you've got some information you'd like to pass along to me, or you'd just like to say where in the world you're listening to AVFS from on Talk Radio AM 640, use one of those two addresses, and thank you so much for that one you sent. I teased you on the last break at the end by calling the real Hebrews the wise ones, as they were called, were in fact the Irish. Yes, the real Hebrews were the Irish. The Phoenicians, who had brought culture to Egypt in the earliest periods of history after the great cataclysms which sank the great continent of old, the one they called Atlantis. Check out the works of master investigators like Connor McDerry, Alvin Boyd, Kuhn, and Gerald Massey. You'll see evidence that the Hebrew alphabet, with its 22 letters, originally is taken from Egypt, and before that, from Ireland. It's in fact the long-lost hieroglyphic script. Christianity came from Judaism, right? But it never has been truthfully divulged before where Judaism had its origins and home. Or just who were the Hebrews and the Jews? The words Hebrew and Jew for deceptive purposes has been conferred on a people of Aramaic race. And it's a misnomer to call this people the modern so-called Jews. Connor McDerry, for instance, mentions this in his book, The Bible, an Irish book. McDerry goes on to say, Hebrew was a secret dialect which was devised by the Irish priesthood, the high priest, to preserve their secret lore and rituals. Its use kept exclusively for the priests only. This was their way of keeping all knowledge of sacred things secret from the uninitiated. It was taken over and made use of by the Roman Catholic Church to conceal and to make believe the believable, the secret fraud that the Illuminati have perpetrated on the Christian world. Connor McDerry goes even further to say Hebrew was never spoken by the Aramaic people of Syria, the so-called Jews, or by the people of any other countries. It was used by the ancient Irish priesthood of Lessa, exactly the same way as Latin was used in the Roman Catholic Church to keep the secrets from the multitudes. Hebrew, the word Hebrew in short, is the language which enables men to pass from one meaning to another, which explains, interprets, gives the allegorical meaning. By Hebrews, therefore, Moses does not mean the Israelites, but men, Israelites or Egyptians, who were schooled in the Hebrew language and the knowledge of Umbres, the initiated, and the initiators. Although the name Hebrew, used for the language of the Bible, belongs to the period of the Bible's formation, the name Hebrew, used as a name for a race of people, goes a lot further back. Related words show up in Sumerian, Assyro-Babylonian, and Egyptian texts in the forms of what's known as Zagaz, Hapiru, Apiru. These words refer to individuals and groups who were not accepted within the accepted political structures of patronage alliances and loyalties that govern society. These Hebrews, in other words, were outlaws. Whether Moses lived or not, he could not have led any mass exodus from Egypt into Canaan, which was Palestine then. No sharply divined Israelite tribes existed, says Rabbi Elmer Berger. At the time when anyone called Moses may have led small groups out of Egyptian slavery, the Hebrew, or the Hebrews, then were already established in Canaan, having reached it long before from Babylon, on the far side. Their name, Hebrew, denotes no racial or tribal identity. It just actually means nomad. The initiation who had passed through the inferior grades and attained the high rank of autops, or eyewitnesses, the initiates, were called by the whole pagan world Israelites, Hebrews. The name of Israelite, Jews or Hebrews, did never designate a political or national body, but were the name which, from an infinitely remote antiquity time, designated the Uprechts, the Autops, the Rechabites, to slightly the highest order of the initiate in the Holy Mysteries, and to whom alone were committed to the oracles of God. So says the Reverend Robert Taylor. Valentina Straton, author of The Celestial Ship of the North, says the Jewish glyph and Hebrew language aren't original, but are borrowed from the Egyptian, the Druid, and are considered sacred. Because you see, the Druids were originally from Egypt, ancient Egypt. Hebrew is made up of the hieroglyphs, symbols and myths of the Egyptians and their gods. The high Druids, for instance, would observe the surrounding heavens to estimate which stars or constellations of importance were prominent. Then the town or locale would be named and founded on that celestial talisman. Great energy went into this. This is why so many national and state flags and seals, as well as heraldic insignias and coat of arms, feature stars, chevrons, strange hybrid animals. What did those hybrid animals represent? Back with that on Talk Radio AM 640 and A View from Space. More right after this. I'm going to call space. It's A View from Space, Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. M.A. writes, "Hey, Space, I'm Irish. When visiting my sister in Georgia, we exchanged stones. Mine from the Blue Matara in Canada for her Georgian shale I smuggled across in my engine compartment. I didn't know about the Destiny Stone brought by Hezekiah's daughter to Ireland. Is it in our blood? We could have exchanged anything, but it was rocks because of our past." Thanks, Emmy. Yeah, people connect to this show with certain bits of information they hear, assimilate it into their life, or compare it to what they know to be true in their life, and make that connection. And my emailer just did. Possibly something that never thought about before, until hearing about the stones. And now she knows why that ritual's in her life. And the meaning of it, too. C. So the high druids would observe the surrounding heavens to estimate which stars or constellations of importance were prominent. Speaking of symbols, great energy went into this. This is why so many state flags and national flags, as I said before the break, and seals, as well as heraldic insignias and coat of arms, feature stars and chevrons and strange hybrid animals. The hybrid animals were to represent certain zodiacal houses. Everything on the nation's flag has to do with the ancient knowledge of the heavens, the sky, not politics at all. If you really and truly want to know about the absolute truth, politics is occultism. Everything is hidden and behind closed doors. All symbols are embedded in the politicians' moves and decisions. Speaking of symbols, I urge you right now to Google the Queen of England's Royal Coat of Arms. Take a look at it. Take a close look at it. The belt surrounding the shield bears the motto of the Order of the Garter. On it's written, On ye soit qui ma y pense. Or, shame on him who evil thinks. The motto at the bottom of the crest says, Dieu est mon droit, which means, God and my right. Actually, it means God and my birthright. And contained in that coat of arms is the lion of the tribe of Judah and the preeminent right-hand position wearing the crown. That's my right. The unicorn is placed on the opposite side, giving an equal stature with the lion. The unicorn, by the way, is the symbol for the Antichrist. It's a horse with a horn growing out of its pineal gland. The gland located in between your eyes where the Hindus would put their caste mark dot. And it's the gland that is supposedly the third eye and is long thought to have mystical powers, inner vision. The Harp of David, which is on the bottom of the coat of arms, recognizes the Davidic covenant and symbolizes the marriage of the two lines of Judah in Ireland through Jeremiah. The House of Lancaster in York used red and white roses in their Battle of the Roses. Balance of red and white, Ida and Pingala, feminine, masculine, alchemy! Red and white, Springs of Avalon, balance of inner and outer worlds, feminine, masculine, the unconscious and conscious mind, the war called the Battle of the Roses was really the battle that decided which side, the mother or the father, would decide the path of the true lineage or bloodline for the kings and queens. In the United Kingdom, Queen Elizabeth's official title is Elizabeth II by the grace of God of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and on her realms and territories, Queen, Head of the Commonwealth, Defender of the Faith. What faith? Judaism? And Christianity? Of course. Prince Charles, though, Prince of Wales, has remarked recently that it should actually say defenders of the faiths, leaving out no religion, blending them all into one, which will finally be morphed into the coming new world religion, Luciferianism, or devil worship. The word Celt is another word for Israelite, Celtish, British Israelites by birth. For example, people of the covenant of the Torah and the Bible and the Ark. Also, the word British is not English. It is Hebrew. Brit, Berit, means covenant in Hebrew. And in Welsh, Ish means man or people of. In Hebrew and English. So, put Brit and Ish together, and you get the word British, meaning the people of the covenant. other words, the people, Israel, of the covenant. Jacob, Israel's fourth son, who was also called Judah, had twin sons called Zerah and Perez. Remember, you have to know who these two are. You can find this in Genesis 38 through verses 28 and 30. When the twins were due to be born, Zerah put his hand out of the womb, and the midwife tied a red cord around his wrist to mark the firstborn and the one with a legitimate birthright. But Zerah, of the red hand, still in the womb, pulled his hand back, and his brother Perez was born first. And so Zerah was born second, and his birthright given to Perez. The name Perez, in Hebrew, it actually means breach. Because Zerah lost his birthright, he went into exile to Iberia. Hiberia, Hebrew's land, and built Zaragoza, which means stronghold of Zerah. Later on, the Israelites' traditional enemy, Babylon, and then Rome, the new Babylon, invaded Iberia, Spain, and drove the Zerahites of the Red Hand to the north of Spain, to Galicia and Biscay today. And many left Iberia, and sailed to Hibernia. Hibernia, the Hebrews' new land, Ireland. Yes, this is where the famous or infamous Red Brigades come in. And Hibernia today is that area of the ocean in the North Sea that is loaded with oil. The Hibernia oil fields. In Jerusalem, from Zerah's brother Perez, came the line of David and Solomon, whose symbol is the Star of David. The Star of David, or more accurately, the Seal of Solomon, the hexagram, is on the Ulster flag. What? The Irish flag? See for yourself. Google Ulster flag PLC, or PIC rather, and you'll be shocked. So how did the Star of David come to Ireland and find its way onto the flag of Ulster? Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon, overthrows King Zedekiah of Jerusalem from the line of David, the year 588 B.C. Jeremiah the prophet took Zedekiah's daughter, called Tiatethi. Jacob's pillar, also called the Ophel, the stone of destiny, the stone of Schoon, or the coronation stone as it's known also, the Ark of the Covenant, were taken from Jerusalem via Tanis in Egypt. Raiders of the Lost Ark film covers this bit of history, by the way. They were taken through Gibraltar, Galicia, and Cornwall, and brought to Ireland for safekeeping, so the story goes. With the help of the prophet Jeremiah, one of the last surviving members of the royalty of the House of David, a princess of Israel, Tiatethi, came to Ireland by way of Egypt. She married the High King of Ireland, and they both reigned, passing on the Israelites and Gnostic Druid ascend teaching in the traditions thereof. The legend is, she's buried somewhere at Tara, along with the Ark of the Covenant. And according to legend, its recovery from Tiatephi's tomb on the hill of the Tara will bring permanent peace to Ulster and Ireland. In the book Scotland's Past Links with Ancient Egypt, the author Barry Dunford actually says that Tiatethi was actually an Egyptian princess. Most likely she was one of the same, both princess of Israel and Egypt, as the Israelites. Hyksos ruled, you see, in Egypt as well, the tribe of Cain. According to the ancient Scots chronicles, the origin of the Scottish people is coming from the lineage of an Egyptian pharaoh's daughter named Princess Skota, may have lived around 1500 BC. That old Irish historical documents support the same tradition, saying that Skota came to Ireland via Spain from Egypt. Even today, there's a piece of a place in Scotland named after her called Glen Skota. The descendants of Skota migrate to Scotland around 300 BC, which is where the Scots' royal lineage actually comes from. It's that bloodline of Cain I tell you about. It's said that Tiatefi, the queen of Israel in Gibraltar, landed on Howth, June 18, 583 BC, traveled to Tara, where she married Eochaid, the high king of Ireland, on June 21st, 583 BC. Eochaid was from the bloodline of Judah, Zara, of the Red Hand, and Tiatefi was from the line of David. When they married, they sealed the breach caused hundreds of years before when Judah's twin sons were born. Check out the altar flag, of the Ulster flag. There's your proof. Flying in the wind. Here today in 2017, the Red Hand is prominently displayed right in the middle. With their marriage union, you can now have the Red Hand mounted on the Star of David under the single royal crown, symbolizing the union of the two royal lines, which sprang from Judah on the flag of Ulster. So now you see that the Ulstermen are not Gentiles at all, but Israelites, descended from Judah, who was Jacob, Israel's fourth son. Even more proof of their identity. The word British is not English, but Hebrew in origin, and means the people of the covenant, or in other words, the people of Israel. The Union Jack is also called the Union Jack because it is the flag of the union of Jacob. Jacob. The British Israeli people of the covenant that is buried inside the Ark of the Covenant on the hill of Tara in Comeath in Ireland. This is one of those archaeological digs I've talked about on AVFS on Talk Radio AM 640 often that will prove all religions have been wrong and will prove that the lies of the Illuminati are actually true. Remember the most quoted line in the movie Da Vinci Code? A secret so powerful, if revealed, it threatened to devastate the very foundation of what? Christianity. Space, back with more on Talk Radio AM 640. I've got to call Spaceman at Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. I just want to repeat what I was talking about before I took this last break, so important. Even more proof of the identity that the word British is not English at all, but in fact Hebrew in origin. And it means the people of the covenant. In other words, the people of Israel. The Union Jack, as I mentioned, is the Union Jack because it's the flag of the union of Jacob. The British Israeli people of the covenant that is buried inside the Ark of the Covenant on the hill of Tara in Comeath in Ireland. And as I was saying, this is one of those archaeological digs that is going to give proof to prove all religions in the world are wrong and will prove that the lies of the Illuminati that they're perpetrating now are actually true. Remember the most quoted line in the movie of the Da Vinci Code again, that movie, a secret so powerful that, if revealed, it threatens to devastate the very foundation of Christianity. That's what they mean. This is the predictive programming that the world has been going through with the Da Vinci Code movie, the promotion of that flick. Sir Ian McClellan uttered this line. The original source in the novel and the book on page 247, a hidden 13, by the way, of the special illustrated edition, has T been saying, a secret so powerful that if revealed, if threatened, It threatens to devastate the very foundation of Christianity. Don't you find that very intriguing? In the previews and the movie, McClellan actually said, a secret so powerful that, if revealed, would devastate the very foundations of mankind. Again, here's the Illuminati taking in all of humanity into its lie. Not just those who believe in Christianity. When the Ark of the Covenant is dug up from Tefi's tomb on the hill of the Torah, it will bring permanent peace to Ulster and Ireland. We're told, in fulfillment of the prophecy in the book of the Tefi Queen of Tara and Gibraltar to his people in Ulster and Ireland. The people in Southern Ireland, you see, are not Gentiles either, as they have been wrongly taught by the Vatican, who wanted them all to be Catholics, but are also Israelites, descended from Judah's brother Dan, the fifth of Jacob, Israel's sons. Recorded in Genesis 30, verse 6, and were known as the Tuatha De Danann, the tribe of Dan, the tribe of Cain, that had magical, or said to have magical, powers. This tribe, this Tuatha De Danann. The Illuminati believe that when all the people of Ireland realize and accept their Israeli roots and reject both of the false religions that pass under and abuse Christ's name and true teachings and learn to keep the covenant they all swore at Sinai to keep forever, how can there be anything but peace? The seventh millennium refers roughly to the present millennium we're in, starting variously in 1962, or some other milestone date. But we are in the seventh millennium. It refers to the beginning of the human urbanization and writing and recorded history, which is variously dated as having begun over 6,000, but under 6,500 years ago. It's a deliberate attempt to avoid cultural bias in long-term dates. Now, interestingly, the seventh millennium is generally acceptable to Christians who accept a very short history of the world, whose creation would be in 4004 BC by some estimates. Some suspect the term for this reason. Others consider it a happy coincidence of written records and the biblical record that reduces the least rational argument and presumably attracts those who believe in creationism. For them, it would emphasize common roots in Adam and Eve and Noah rather than the overt cultural and religious distinctions that came up later. The time frame may have been coined specifically to focus on human common origins. The use of the seventh millennium is most common among secular futurists and those who consider themselves to be world citizens. You know, the globalists. These people have an agenda of technological globalization and then political globalization and then religious globalization. I call the New World Order. As it now turns out, with a little bit of hindsight, we can now better understand the prediction. From heaven will come a great king of terror, alarm, warning, a prophet, Elijah, as in the Old Testament book of Malachi chapter 4. He will bring back to life the great king of Israel, Christ from the tribe of Joseph Ephraim, as recorded in Genesis 49, verse 10, lines 22-24 of the King James Version of the Bible. Before the warning, World Trade Center attack, after the Third World War, Armageddon, reigns in good time, the seventh of the Sabbath millennium will be upon us. Genesis 49:10 states, "The scepter shall not depart from Judah to Joseph, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall the gathering of the people be." Shiloh, of course, the Christ. The Spaceman on Talk Radio, AM 640. The counterfeit is coming, called the Antichrist, in his place. Believe it. I'm the guy they call the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. Last segment, final segment of tonight's show. The word Celt is the anglicized form of the Greek word Keltoi, which means the people who are different. In biblical scripture, all nations except for the 12 tribes of Israel are referred to as Gentiles, foreigners. So the only people who are different are Israel. The word Celt is therefore another word for Israelite. The Celts are part of the 10 lost tribes of Israel, as are the Tuatha De Danann and Milesians. In Irish mythology, the Milesians were the descendants of Mil Espagne, the final invaders of Ireland who defeated and displaced the semi-divine Tuatha De Danann. Semi-divine meaning they are descendants of the Anunnaki, aliens from another planet, who mated with human women who gave birth to them, and the Bible calls them the Nephilim. The Irish people are a mixture of Celt, Danann, Milesian, Judah, Zerites of the Red Hand, as described in Genesis 38, verses 28 through 30. The Danish, the Vikings, and Norsemen are all racial cousins. Another book worth reading to confirm Irish Israelite ancestry is a book called The O'Neills of Ulster. Deuteronomy, for instance, 14, verse 2, "For thou art an holy people unto the I Am, thy God, and the I Am hath chosen thee to be a peculiar people unto himself, above all the nations that are upon the earth," meaning special, different. Genesis 38:28 states, "It came to pass when she traveled that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, this came out first. And as it came to pass, drew back his hand, that behold, his brother came out. And she said, how hast thou broken forth? Why hast thou made this breach against thee? Therefore his name was called Pharez," meaning breach. "And afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was called Zerah," meaning scarlet. Therefore the Celts, according to the God of the Bible, are Israelites. The Irish Celts held three sacred assemblies every year at Tara during Beltane, Lunasog, and Samhain, which assured there were a lot of corn and milk, freedom from conquest, the enjoyment of righteous laws, comfort in every house, fruit in every abundance, a plenty of fish in their lakes and rivers, exactly as God guaranteed Israel in the Torah, the Tara, if they kept the covenant. Also during the Feast of Torah, the kings of Ireland used to settle the affairs of Ireland for 7 years, so that debts, suits, and adjustments used not to be submitted for judgment until the next feast, 7 years later, which the Torah calls the year of the I Am's release, when all debts were forgiven. Every 7 years. This proves that the Irish Celtic law was based on the Torah and is further confirmation of the Celts being Israelites. Can you imagine the debts of all the countries in the world today if we had that old law? After 7 years, debts canceled. Bye-bye. We're even. Then where would the power be of our elites? They couldn't hold the debt over your head and charge you more taxes. Their control would be almost nullified. The year of the Jubilee, as it was called, the forgiveness of all debt, was to assure the father did not pass on his debt to his son, the next generation. Right now, that's the grip the Illuminati and their banking cabal system has on the world. Yeah, you get worse than your dad had. And the son's son will even be in a deeper debt. I believe we've reached the unpaybackable tipping zone in global debt. And now the Fisher Kings are come to cash in, to take what they believe is theirs through debt. See, the Irish people rejected that English, that Davidic monarchy and its anti-covenant laws, but the Celtic Irish people are Israelites descended from Jacob, Israel's fifth tribe of his 12 sons, who was called Dan and fathered the Tuatha De Danann, the tribe of Dan, the Irish and Danish. So the Irish people are Celtish, British Israelites by birth. The people of the covenant and the Torah and the Bible and the Ark, which they say is buried at Tara, which is confirmed, by the way, by the Irish metrical Bin Suckas. Now, Irish literature is full of references to Tiatefi, the Phoenician queen, coming to Ireland, being its queen and later being buried in an unviolated tomb, or Mergech at Tara. Mergech is not an Irish word, it's Hebrew, and it signifies a secure depository for treasures. Ireland is also called Hibernia. Hibernia from Heber, Eber, the great granddad of Abraham, who was the granddad of Jacob, Israel, where the Celts are descended. And where are the Hibernia oil deposits found? In the northwest Atlantic Ocean between Canada and Ireland, of all places, the Hibernia oil fields. Hibernia means Hebrew's new land. Iberia, Spain, means Hebrew's land. The Basque, Galician, Asturian. Guipuzcoan Celts are the cousins. The Ark is supposedly lost, like the 10 lost tribed House of Israel, but they will soon be found together and revealed at the same time by the Illuminati. Here's some interesting, little-known but fascinating facts about Iraq. Did you know that Operation Iraqi Liberation spells O-I-L? The Garden of Eden was in Iraq. And it sure doesn't look much like paradise on earth today, as the Illuminati-controlled mass media keep flashing pictures of Iraq. Mesopotamia, which is now Iraq, was the cradle of civilization. Noah built the Ark in Iraq. The Tower of Babel was also located in Iraq. Abraham was from Ur, which is in southern Iraq. Isaac's wife, Rebecca, is from Nahor, which is in, again, Iraq. Jacob met Rachel in Iraq. Noah preached in Nineveh, which is in Iraq. By the way, Nineveh is the area where the Yazidis have always lived. Assyria, which is in Iraq, conquered the 10 tribes of Israel. Amos cried out in Iraq. Babylon, which is in Iraq, destroyed Jerusalem. Daniel was in the lion's den. In where? Iraq. The three Hebrew children were in the fire. In Iraq. Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, saw the writing on the wall. Where? In Iraq. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, carried the Jews captive into Iraq. Where did Ezekiel preach? Iraq. The empire of man, described in Revelation. It's called Babylon, which is a city in Iraq. And you've probably seen this one. Israel is the nation most often mentioned in the Bible, but do you know which nation is second? It's Iraq! But that's not the name that's used in the Bible. The names used in the Bible are the land of Shinar, Mesopotamia, Babylon. The word Mesopotamia actually means two rivers. More exactly, the Tigris and Euphrates. The name Iraq means country with deep roots. Indeed, Iraq is a country with deep roots and a very significant country in the Bible. I believe Iraq is going to be where the Third World War begins. The name Iraq means country with deep roots. And indeed, Iraq is a country with deep roots and is a very significant country when it comes to the end times. Eden was in Iraq. Adam and Eve were created in Iraq. Satan made his first recorded appearance in Iraq. Nimrod established Babylon and the Tower of Babel in Iraq. The confusion of the languages for the world took place in Iraq. Abraham came from a city in Iraq. Isaac's bride came from Iraq. Jacob spent 20 years there. The first world empire, the first world government by Nimrod was in Iraq. The greatest revival in history was in a city of Iraq. The events of the Book of Esther all took place in Iraq. The Book of Nahum was a prophecy against a city in Iraq. And the Book of Revelation has prophecies against Babylon, which was the old name for the nation of Iraq. Revelation 17 and 18, and no other nation except Israel has more history and more prophecy associated with it than Iraq. Like I said, it'll start there and draw the world in for the Third World War. Make that void for the replacement of a religion for the world and a political organization for the world. This has been A View from Space and Talk Radio, AM 640. Coast to Coast is next on Space and